Welcome to the Financial Markets Insights podcast brought to you by the Realization Group, where we bring together the best minds in the financial and capital markets industry to discuss all the latest trends and news. I'm your host, Helen Disney. In this episode, we'll be discussing the challenges of scaling blockchains, why the Ethereum network is struggling to cope with explosion in demand for DeFi, NFT and gaming, and what is being done to address the challenges of bigger silos and lack of interoperability between blockchain solutions. So morning, Sham. I'm here today with Sham Duraswamy from the deep tech company QPQ, and we're going to be talking about the challenges of scaling blockchains, which is a huge issue and one that's been around since, I think, the very beginning of this technology, is how do we take it mainstream and how do we speed things up? So maybe we can start, Sham, with you just giving a bit of a background and introduction to yourself and how you got involved with QPQ.
Yeah, thanks, Helen, for having us. I've been at QPQ for a year now as Chief Strategy Officer. In my past life, I spent 15 years at IBM as a technical sales leader. There, I had a lot of exposure to building complex systems, designing them, building them. And over the last 5 years, mainly on the IoT side, worked with the transition from products and services being more physical to completely digital. And there, basically, things are, if you think about the business models already that are coming in and the business models of the future, they are, it's things like selling a small amount of services in a very contextual way. That, for example, that would be mobility as a service. When you go for your Uber ride, the price changes all the time. It's selling, buying and selling energy, buying and selling data, or using data to do pricing, et cetera. So I basically had a lot of exposure, and the question that kept coming up is, you know, the world, the business model of the future is about markets of markets, but the current financial market infrastructure is not what we want to take forward. It needs to be completely digital and need to handle a whole range of assets. And this is where I started to look at how do we do this, and I had a chance to work with QPQ, and there's something I think we've got some very good answers, and therefore I made the jump.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's so interesting, you know, this shift that blockchain and DLT, even the concept of a sort of decentralized network, is bringing about, is the idea that we can kind of change the substrate of how we operate in terms of, as you say, the transactions, the speed, the sort of interoperability and the frictionlessness of our transactions and our business activities or our personal activities online. So I'm really interested because, you know, over the last 18 months, we've had a kind of real explosion in different applications of blockchain. Obviously, there's been the growth of decentralized finance, which is known as DeFi. There's non-fungible tokens, NFTs, and there's gaming. And all of those are opportunities for people to kind of enter into the market and get involved in different ways. Do you think with all those different categories and users, the space is now more ready for mass adoption? And, you know, do you think the sort of payment infrastructure in the core financial system is ready for that?
Yeah, I think we've seen growth on multiple layers. The amount of developers that are coming in, I think it's about 50% year on year over the last couple of years. And so there's more developers, more projects, more users, and actually so many different things to do, right? This explosion of categories as well. So that's the good news, right? There's this tremendous amount of growth. The end user experience, however, is that actually that growth has led to greater and greater silos, you know, within, so there's about 100, 110 layer one DLTs, and they all do slightly different things. And if you're a project, if you take one of the projects that is very popular, is, let's take Uniswap, and the way they've solved reaching more customers and more users is they've basically put their project in as many DLTs as possible. It's like opening a Tesco store in every town, right? And what we really want to get to is something like an Amazon. You just have one store, one platform, and you can reach everybody. And that moment hasn't quite, that hasn't happened yet, right? So there's growth, but you're just creating more and more silos, and you're serving your local community there. And from an end user perspective, they can't go to all the places that they want to go very quickly, you know, but there's a lot of friction in that process. So we industry now needs to deal with this new challenge of dealing with this new growth and solving the next phase of problems.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting, isn't it? Because, there was initially the Bitcoin blockchain, and then Ethereum came along with its smart contract functionality. And now we've got so many different blockchains, all with slightly different purposes and different, options and functionalities. And I suppose, the vast majority of the use cases that I mentioned, most of the DeFi activity, NFT platforms, gaming is all being built on Ethereum, and it still remains very popular. But we know it gets congested and blocked up when there's too many people trying to do too many things. So, how far have we got with Ethereum scaling? What are the options? Because different scaling proposals have been made multiple times, certainly over the last, 8 years or so since I've been following the blockchain world. So, do you still think that Ethereum is seen as the sort of master blockchain of the future?
Yeah, the developers and the projects that have come in, they have stuck to Ethereum, right? There is a belief that this problem will be solved in the near future, but the reality is, as you alluded to, they've been waiting a really long time. So two things have happened. One is the Ethereum mainnet themselves. Vitalik said in 2016, "Look, we need to transition. We need to scale." But that was like 5, 6 years ago, and only this year, and it's even going to be delayed now. They're going to move to proof of stake, but proof of stake is going to keep the end user experience the same. You're still waiting 20 minutes for finality, and you're still paying more or less the same gas fees. So nothing's changed. There are other solutions like sharding, which will make things a bit faster. That won't even be out until 2023, and based on past record, it could be a lot later as well. And further to that, that is just one, it will have its own limits as well. So you have this track of can Ethereum mainnet scale, and it hasn't, and they're trying, right? And therefore, around it, there's been a lot of activity as well. So we've got other EVM chains like Avalanche and Avalanche Polygon and Phantom and many others who are trying different approaches to take EVM but make it faster. So you have some of them, and they are better as well. Then you have layer two solutions who are trying to solve scaling as well. Now, so there are multiple attempts at scaling, but in general, the way you can look at it is they all hit some type of threshold, and we're only at maybe 20 million users right now. And if we get to the next threshold at, let's say, 100 million users and more use cases there, then we're going to hit that threshold, and we're going to struggle again. So I think Ethereum and the industry is still looking for a truly scalable way that can meet all the requirements, all the users going forward, and all the serious use cases as well. If you take payments or financial transactions in the regulated markets, they are exponentially. Their requirements are exponentially greater than what the solutions that we see right now. So more work to be done.
Yeah, I mean, I think 20 minutes is obviously a very long time if you compare to something like the seconds it takes to transact on MasterCard or, Amazon One Click or, a lot of other different solutions in the payments world. And I suppose the other question is this issue of silos going back to that. I mean, in a way, what we're doing in the digital world is sort of replicating the problems of traditional finance. As you mentioned, we've got kind of more silos, the silos are getting bigger. And then we've also got this issue of interoperability. If you've got so many different blockchains, how do they all talk to each other? So, what type of solutions do you think are out there and emerging for that?
So, because there's been this explosion of blockchains, people have started to attempt interoperability in a couple of different ways. The most popular example would be bridges. Now, bridges, they're like point-to-point solutions, right? You take a DLT and another DLT, and a specific place in one DLT and the target DLT, and then you connect them, and then you can connect many of them. The problem with bridges, A, 70% of them have been hacked, so there's a big security issue. And then the other is you have to go to a place in the source DLT, then go to the target. And if you suddenly want to go to another blockchain, sometimes you have to come all the way back and then go there. So basically, they're very specific solutions, and they're not really general interoperability. So from an end user perspective, you always have to keep in mind how your assets got to somewhere to figure out if you want to go somewhere else, maybe you have to go back and then go. So it's a total mess. Now there are some other interesting solutions, and what they're doing is creating clusters and they're forming groups. Examples would be Cosmos and Polkadot, where they're saying that around this one or these this framework, maybe 100 other blockchains can come in and interoperate. So there are various attempts at these types of clustered approaches, but there the more that you add in, they start to hit scalability issues. If you have 100 blockchains and lots of people go there, then how does the whole thing scale and interoperate? So there's always this tension between it just ends up being another form of decentralization, right? So there isn't yet a natural way for blockchains to talk to each other and then simultaneously scale as well and make the whole experience frictionless.
Yeah, and I guess also, there's also different software, whether it's kind of legacy systems or, more modern systems in the traditional finance world. How do those interact? Because more and more traditional finance wants to get exposure to digital assets, and perhaps, some of the high yields you're seeing in DeFi, but, they're regulated companies, so how do they link in as well? I guess that's another aspect.
Yeah, the regulated perimeter, they are that comes in on top. So projects are dedicated projects for, you can call them like KYC DeFi projects are coming along. So you have Uniswap, which is like a general purpose protocol for it's uncensored, if you like, or it's permissionless. Anyone can come in and use it. And then there is another version of Uniswap where it's only KYC people that come in. So they're using things like whitelisting and so on to come in. The challenge that they have in this context is as more and more projects pop up in more and more places, how do you move your assets around very efficiently, right? So there are pockets of regulated places that people can go to, institutions can go to. However, they're not able to move around in a frictionless way. So the way industry's been solving it right now is they're building these exchanges in what you call CeFi or in traditional finance. So if you went to the existing custodians, they try to offer you all your solutions right there on their infrastructure so that you don't have to go on chain. And therefore, the whole thing ends up being you're trading blockchain tokens, but you're trading it off chain. You're trading it, you can even call it off exchange. You're trading it in another venue.
Yeah, so
So,
people are kind of switching between a centralized and a decentralized model in order
yeah.
to somehow patch up these gaps that exist. I think that's really interesting. And you've obviously, as a company, QPQ, recently come out of stealth mode. And when we talk about deep tech company, that really means companies that work on very thorny, difficult technical issues. So can you tell us a bit more about the company and what its intentions are? Because it sounds like what we've already talked about certainly provides an opportunity to fix some very difficult technical issues that we have today in blockchain.
Yeah, we've been in R&D mode for about 5 years because these problems are really hard, and this is the first year we're coming out to do to really commercialize, and we've had to rebuild things multiple times and make sure we get it right. The first products that we're coming out with is to solve the network side of all the problems that we just spoke through. How do you get scalability? How do you get interoperability? And then how do you provide the tooling for people to build projects as well? And then at a later stage, we will build for the regulated perimeter around custody, around exchanges, and so on. So yeah, we're excited to bring these solutions to market. Now, the main our philosophies use the strengths of different DLTs and different products and take a more synergistic approach. And it's all we call it like layer zero approach. So we're not competing with the existing blockchains, but we help them harness their strengths to achieve scalability. You know, an example of that is why do we talk about or why do people only have scalability in one place? If we can aggregate all the different fast, cheap, secure, scalable solutions, blockchains that are out there, and we can route users to wherever they want, you know. So and therefore the faster blockchains there are, the more capacity you have, and you can route people to all the least congested places. And therefore, from an end user perspective, you don't have to worry about scalability anymore, right? So it's a modular approach. And in a similar way, you don't have to code in just Ethereum and stay in Ethereum. You code in the language that you want. Maybe it's Solidity and you like the EVM chain. But how can then your project be available to all the users in all of the blockchains, right? And therefore, you don't have to drop your project in multiple places. You just build it once and it's available to everybody. So we take this, it's a bit orthogonal. We take this synergistic, future-proof approach, and we believe it's ready for to release it into the wild and people to use it. So yeah, it'll be available in alpha in a few months. Sorry, in May, and then in beta in the middle of the summer.
So this is your solution that you're calling One Click DLT, which I guess brings us back to the Amazon analogy, is that we don't want all these different shops or shop fronts. We want one marketplace where we can shop around. So what, I mean, you've mentioned some of them already, but what are the specific benefits of
Yeah.
One Click DLT for the challenges that we've been talking about?
So our thesis is that if we make blockchains as fast and secure as the current user experience, so you know, websites load in 2 seconds, you can make your payment in 5 seconds. So if blockchains can go from being 20 minutes, 10 minutes down to actually 5 seconds, we believe there'll be an explosion of people wanting to build their projects there, their own payments or gaming or all kinds of things. So the first thing, if that is there, then what we should provide is the tooling to build your project. So one-click DLT is within a single click, you'll be able to stand up your own blockchain, your own DLT. And that is integrated to the public blockchains. Historically, we've seen within a couple of clicks, you get your own private blockchain and you're trapped in a silo. So the alternative is we provide a one-click DLT that is already integrated through the layer zero solution to all the blockchains out there. And therefore, all of those users and all of the services that are there, you can build solutions that interact with them. So this is a tooling and infrastructure for building, you know, for designing, testing, and then ultimately running your business. So it's like a gateway into Web3, as it were. And it's
That's exactly the
targeting.
word I was just going to use. I was going to say it sounds like a gateway, and I can imagine it's a very attractive proposition for a lot of developers who are struggling to solve these types of problems. So you mentioned the alpha release is going to be in May. In the meantime, how can people find out more if they want to know more at this stage?
Yeah, so we invite people to come to our website, qpq.io, and sign up for the alpha, sign up for the beta. In the alpha that we've had interest from people who want to use fast consensus. So we've got people who want to do thousands of transactions per day, and they want those transactions to be done on a public blockchain. So we've got many financial and non-financial use cases that are going to use One Click DLT in the alpha product to access public DLTs or consensus on public DLTs. And in beta, we'll have bridging as well. And therefore, then you get scalability and you get interoperability. And so again, if you're in the alpha, you get to go on to the beta or you can join in the beta. And then in September, we're ready to support in a production setting. You know, once beta is over, you can operate your business in a reliable way. We'll have very good SLAs, and you can transition your projects there and you're ready to go.
Fantastic. And obviously developers are going to be all over this, I imagine, exploring what the possibilities are, but who would be the ultimate end users? Who are the customers that would want to use this? Obviously, there's a whole variety of use cases I can think of for this kind of consensus as a service. Rather than software as a service, it's kind of access to this consensus mechanism that underpins distributed ledger technology. So who are the users that you imagine coming to your
Yeah.
platform?
So I think it will be we believe that there'll be a lot of volume use cases. So example would be payments. This is a fun, so crypto payments and replacement of traditional payment rails hasn't happened yet, and it was back to how do you make it fast and secure, and so on. That would be one of the major use cases. Others would be gaming and so on. So what we expect would be that payment use cases and others would want to come in, build here, manage their assets here on using one-click DLT, and then they'll be able to secure pricing and secure transaction capacity so that if they because their business is probably predictable, they don't have to worry about the variable gas fees that you have on Ethereum and many other blockchains, right? What we offer on the transaction side is you can those volume players can say how much capacity that they want, and they can based on their requirements, they can secure a price. And that price will be based on market demand as well, but they'll be able to get predictability. And ultimately, all of that translates to, as an end user perspective, maybe payment costs are actually going to be lower than the costs that you see right now. And also, finality will be achieved a lot more quicker as well. So it's a win in terms of a compelling and competitive business differentiation. So that's why projects should move there. And then from an end user perspective, they are operating on faster, cheaper rails. So it should be a frictionless experience. Things like micropayments, you know, if you're on websites and you want to do small micropayments, there's a lot of friction in that process right now. It's expensive. There's somebody, one of the projects in the alpha, they actually need to pay people 20 pence for every time a bottle is recycled, for example, or a can of Coke is recycled. They want to pay the teenagers that have put it into the recycling center. They want to pay them 20 pence. The problem is that if they use a traditional rail, they also have you know, you have to pay the 10p, or there's a minimum fee that you have to pay. So it makes no economic sense to pay 20 pence and then pay a small 10, you know, 10 pence per transaction. So
Yeah,
what
I
the
think this has
customer
always been the issue, hasn't it, with micropayments, that the credit card commission charges or payment processing charges wipe out the economic
Exactly.
rationale behind micropayments. And obviously speed is the other aspect, that you're not going to want to wait 20 minutes to receive 20 pence. So I think micropayments is probably one of the biggest challenges still for DLT.
Yeah, and in their use case, it's school kids. You know, they want to they don't want batching of these transactions and then payments to happen in the middle of the night. They want their 20 pence then and there, so that if they've, you know, recycled a few things, then they want as quickly as possible to get their £1 or £2 or whatever it is, so that they can go and spend it somewhere, right? Maybe buy a
Enough a
bar of
bag of
chocolate or something.
chips.
Exactly. So it was something we didn't anticipate, but it's great that and the great thing is it's not trading. It's not classic crypto, right? This is something totally different. But it's just to give you a sense, we're talking about millions of transactions per day where they want to facilitate this, right?
Yeah,
It's a
and
high volume
incentivizing
business.
people to be green and to recycle is obviously a fantastic thing to do. So it sounds like there's a huge amount of different options, you know, just in the same way you're providing a marketplace to access different DLT solutions, there's a whole marketplace of different use cases that you're going to be pulling together on the platform. So I'm very excited to see what happens as QPQ launches out into the market. Wishing everybody the best of luck with the project. And it was great talking to you today, Sham. And I hope we'll stay in touch and that people will come to qpq.io to find out the next steps.
Thanks, Helen. Talk to you next time.
Thanks to all our listeners for joining us. You've been listening to the monthly Financial Markets Insights podcast hosted by me, Helen Disney. Subscribe to the podcast to stay informed of all our future shows, or you can sign up for our newsletter to get all the latest updates from the Realization Group at therealizationgroup.com. That's the Realization, REALIZATION group.com. See you next time for more Financial Markets Insights.